Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Welcome to the show. Thrilled that you're listening. Later on, we'll talk about clutter. Wendy has a horrible, horrible case of clutteritis.
Can I just tell you that I thought it was only me, and it's not?
No. No.
You think it's only me?
No. No, no, no.
Really?
I know a lot of people who suffer from this. This is where you just accumulate things, and they stack up, and you don't know what to do with them. And she can help you. This woman can help.
Hoarder's material.
No.
You go into almost any radio host's office.
Yep.
And see, it's clutter city.
Yep.
My office is much cleaner than my home space.
Oh, my God.
What? Go look at my desk.
Yeah, I have to say, in all the years I've known you, this is by far the cleanest your things have ever been. By far.
I know. At various radio stations.
Yeah.
I mean, I still have a stack of papers, but I just shove them in a drawer and hope they'll go away.
Sure.
That's what I do. They
and
don't go away.
And that has not worked out.
No.
Will help you. Also, Dr. John Duffy will be by to talk
about
help a
me
couple.
Too.
I know. Between those two guests, I'm positive this will be a good day for you.
I don't mean to be selfish,
no.
But while they're here.
Right. You got to ask. Steve, I have to ask you a quick question. There was a story in the news that I was honestly, like the whole ride in, I was worried about. And this
yeah.
is this little boy who was missing. He didn't show up.
9 years old.
9 years old. Lives very close to his grade school. And then yesterday didn't show up. And I heard Steve Grzanich say it has a happy ending, but I don't know what it is. What happened?
Well, they found the boy safe. He was nearby, I think, 74th and Vincennes. So we don't know exactly
the story behind it.
The story behind it. He's a 9 year old boy.
Yeah.
You know, and I certainly did some things when I was 9 years old, so I don't know, you know, if there was but the boy was safe, so police haven't said they've seen anything about a crime or anything. So maybe he went to a friend's house. I don't know yet.
But they found his backpack.
Well, right, that's what doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. They thought they found his backpack near a dumpster. So there are certainly questions here that I would imagine the police are working on. But the good news is the boy is home safe.
Thank
All
God.
I kept thinking is, as a parent, the nightmare that you must go through, and it just gets worse as, you know, every hour passes, it gets worse and worse and worse. As you say, he takes the same steps every day. Where
right.
is he? I can't imagine how scared they must have been.
And in a time where cell phones, I don't know if the kid had a cell phone, but
yeah.
cell phones are everywhere. I mean, think about when we were younger, we would go out on a Saturday morning, or sometimes we'd go out after school. And we'd
no
be
contact.
MIA for a long time.
Yeah, right. The story reminded me, and I know I've shared this with you at some point. My mom was a teacher's aide for a while, and there was a boy who usually caused a lot of trouble at school. Just Robert. Let's go with Robert. Robert was his first name. I won't give his last name. And the teacher put him in. The policy in the classroom that my mom assisted in was, if you were bad, the teacher sent you into this area where they were like, it was like a giant curtain that slid the whole length of the room. And that's where we would put our coats and our boots and our bags.
I was going to say, it's a coat closet.
The coat room.
Yeah, but it wasn't,
mine was just a partition in the
that
back
was,
of the room.
We called them the cloak rooms.
Oh, yeah. Yep, that's
and Bill used
too.
To wear a cloak in between classrooms.
I wore a cloak because myself and Dr. Watson would solve crimes during lunch. Yeah, well, the cloak room sounds very formal. But it was a sliding partition.
Right.
That you
accordion
made,
door.
Yeah, like an accordion door. So in this particular classroom, if you were a bad child, as Robert often was, the teacher would send you in there. And I mean, today, 2019, nobody in their right mind would do that. But back then, in the
70s... Why wouldn't they do it now? Robert probably had the best time in the world. He didn't have to do work.
Robert never complained.
Yeah.
Robert was fine with that. Sometimes the teacher wouldn't even say anything. Robert would just nod his head and just go in there.
Gotcha.
He knew where he was going to go.
Not yet, Robert.
Right. Let's wait until you do something, Robert. So on this particular day, the teacher sent him in there and then just forgot about him. And around 4:30 or 5 o'clock, Robert's parents are calling the school saying, Robert usually comes home around 3:30. We haven't seen him. And it got crazier and crazier and crazier. And then finally somebody said, let's just check the let's see if he's in there. And there he was.
See, Robert was not a good troublemaker because he was
right.
too quiet. Because
oh,
wouldn't
right.
you at that point
right.
when everything's quiet come out and go, hey, teach, what's up?
Right. No, he didn't do that part. He stayed. The teacher said, you got to stay in there. And he stayed in there.
Well, at least he listened to authority.
Yeah, that was the one time he listened.
I got socked in the nose in the coat room one time.
By whom?
I'm not going to say he still lives in the area, but...
Really?
Yeah.
Intentionally?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought maybe he was putting his coat on and whacked you in the face.
No, I think I was in first grade or something. Boom.
I always had to sit in the quiet chair in kindergarten.
What exactly constituted that? Where was the chair in relation to everything else?
You know how you go to kindergartens these days, or even some of the elementary schools, you go to a parent-teacher conference, and the chairs are so small you can't even fit your butt on them?
Yeah.
Well, this was a big teacher chair, a wooden one, no cushioning, and if you talk too much in class, you had to sit in the quiet chair, and I swear to God, I spent almost the whole year of kindergarten in the quiet chair, and
they
you
now call
talk.
That chair the Wendy chair.
I know, and I'm That's honored, quite
That's
honestly.
The tribute. The school's tribute to you, as they refer to that now as the Wendy chair.
But it didn't work. I mean, no, you couldn't talk. I never really tested it. That was where I stopped. I drew the line.
Yeah.
Because I didn't talk when I was in the quiet chair, but I would always make faces and, like, you know, wave to kids and stuff and distract them. But I mean,
here's where we should be shocked, but none of us are.
No, I know. But I'm really glad that I didn't, like, try to push the envelope there and talk in the quiet chair.
No.
I knew to stop then.
No.
I was like Robert. I knew when it was time to stop.
Most of the teachers at our school, the punishment was you had to go out in the hall. Like, if the teacher said, you're also in the hall. We didn't have a quiet chair. Our teachers didn't think of the partition of going in the cloakroom.
I would have loved that.
It was, because think about it. It's your own little space there. You could do whatever you wanted
it's
in
like
there.
It's like your clubhouse.
Yeah.
I'm sure Robert was in there a lot.
Robert spent a good amount of time in there. My mom used to describe him. She'd always go, you know that little boy Robert who looks like a blur? And everybody would just nod. They would nod and they'd go, yeah, I know who that is, just by that description. Because he was always in motion. There was never a time where he was just stationary.
I told you yesterday on the stream that my neighbor, Mr. Kratz, used to call me the White Tornado for the same reason.
Yep.
I was, Robert and I had a lot
always
in common. Perhaps had we met,
you guys would fall in love and get married.
Yeah. Soulmates, maybe.
That would be great. That would be great. And open up a chair company, the quiet chair company.
And a cloakroom.
Yeah, cloakroom, too. All right, we'll take a break. We've got a lot more show. Stay here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Did you watch the president last night? Do I bring this up? I don't even know what to do.
No. My family and I went out to dinner with my dad, and I did. My plan was to come home and watch it, and then I just didn't.
I watched
Manifest
it.
Instead. Was it weirder than Manifest?
Oh, I watched that too. Thank God the DVR is available, because I still watch The Conners.
Yeah.
The Roseanne show without Roseanne that she doesn't profit from.
Yeah.
And the little kid on that show was talking about going to an art class at the Art Institute taught by Tony Fitzpatrick.
We know him.
Yeah.
That's a Chicago
guy. He was just here last week.
Yeah. And I worked with him. I partnered with him on the radio at The Loop
on the show, they live fairly close to
Chicago.
Right,
and they mentioned the Field Museum. There were a lot of Chicago references last night.
Well,
but I'm just sitting there watching, and this kid with flair, I think he is, I don't know if he's gay or what, but his character is he's got a lot of flair.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, there's an art class, and it's being taught at the Art Institute by Tony Fitzpatrick.
Wow.
He's really good. And so I recorded it on my phone, put it on Facebook, and gave Tony, like, nice shout out, and he
was. I wonder if he knew that was coming.
No,
he didn't know that was coming.
Baffled, and he was blown away, and he was totally honored. And he goes, "I'd teach that kid any day."
Wow, that's excellent.
So I watched that, and I watched The Kids Are All Right because my friend Lisa Nelson writes for that show. Tim Doyle created it, and Mark Hamill is a fan of that show. He tweeted out, I know Mark Hamill's a big fan of Svengoolie as well.
Yes.
But Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker, said, you know, as a kid from as a middle kid in a big Catholic family, I'm really loving this show and I can really relate.
Nice endorsement.
So it was like great television, The Conners, and then The Kids Are All Right, and then I watched Donald Trump.
And what were your findings?
He can read a teleprompter.
Yeah.
We
had teleprompter President Trump last night, right?
We did.
He didn't go rogue at all. He didn't share any of his intimate thoughts without them being on the prompter.
He threw in a very sad, I think, which was off the cuff probably, but that was it.
All right.
Yeah, very sad. I had some mixed emotions. I watched it with my son Michael, who's 19, and Donald Trump was talking about the people coming over the border and raping and dismembering. And I thought to myself, might there be children watching this?
Possibly, sure.
It just seemed inappropriate to get that graphic in a presidential speech from the Oval Office.
Yeah.
It was hard to hear. I know that was kind of his point, to fear, you know, to give us fear. But I thought, you know, this is a president. Perhaps kids in school are watching it for school, you know, as homework. And I just thought it was terribly inappropriate. And then I found it very weird that there was a chance for Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer to talk after it. I like it, but mm-hmm. There's never been like a post-game show when other presidents have spoken.
I think there was once, and I think I saw a reference to one before, Wendy.
They always do it after a State of the Union address. They right. always let.
But Oval Office addresses are supposed to be, above that. That's
unchallenged.
Well, not just unchallenged, but they don't come in moments of politics. They come in moments of crisis or, Richard Nixon talking about the energy shortage or Ronald Reagan talking about the Challenger disaster.
Yeah.
Barack
where
Obama.
Where you wouldn't need it, you mean?
Well, where it's not a political thing.
Oh, I get it.
And
okay.
So this speech last night was a political event in many ways designed to win support for the wall. But Barack Obama gave an immigration speech during his tenure that many thought was going to be a political speech, and the networks didn't carry it for that reason.
Yeah.
So there's usually a pretty high bar for a national address from the Oval Office.
Now, explain this to me, because I've read bits and pieces, but I can't fully understand this. It was up to each network individually whether or not they would carry this?
They all ran it.
They all ran it.
The president would request airtime, and then it would be up to the networks whether or not to do it.
They would have dropped the ball if they didn't run it, quite honestly.
I guess so.
But again, they didn't do it. They refused during the Obama administration at one time. But I think that just shows how the president, President Trump, has succeeded in putting the media on its heels in some ways, because had they not done it, it would have been seen as such a confrontational move, although it might have been historically typical for them to not give the air. But because of the animosity now, they were kind of in a trick bag. I don't think they could have said no.
It was just strange to me. I guess, you know, and I've watched presidential addresses before by many presidents, and I never saw members of Congress then not really dispute it, but come back and say, kind of critique his.
Sure.
It made me realize what a crazy time we live in right now.
So one of the major criticisms in all this is he's selling it as the potential danger that's coming into the United States from other countries is coming in by way of this Mexican border, and that's why the wall must be put up. But then there's all kinds of statistics showing that the true danger is not coming in that way.
No, and especially the drugs and that. And I understand what Donald Trump was doing. If you're talking about effectiveness, he did it. He got you. You know, you're sitting there. Opioid epidemic is huge. He brings that up. We're all into that. And then, you know, wow, that's all coming in through the border. And then you find out that it's coming in at legal checkpoints. It's being smuggled.
Right. So why wouldn't you, I know it's Donald Trump and he plays by a different set of rules, but why wouldn't you address that and say, hey, all these stats are saying that's where the trouble is, so that's where we really need to focus. Why is that so difficult?
I don't know. And I don't know, you know, the Democrats are saying, yes, we need border security. There are people, all of us, who think, you know, we need to protect our country. We mm-hmm. do. But there are ways to do it. And it just seems like he's just, you know, digging his heels in. I'm going to close the government. Is he asking for money for the wall because he promised it in his campaign and
yes.
doesn't want to fail? Is that really
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
Yes. Well,
the Democrats are refusing to give him the money because he campaigned on it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a political issue on both sides. You know, I mean, there's federal money that went toward building a Lawrence Welk Museum in the Dakotas.
Right.
I mean,
right.
you know, the Congress is certainly able to spend money badly.
But what about these?
So even if they think this is money badly spent, you know, they could do it. But the Democrats just are not going to relent because it's become this singular Trump issue. They're not going to give him that money.
I am not into politics. I'm really not. I never talked about it until fairly recently because mm-hmm. it's in the news.
Mm-hmm.
And why does the government need to shut down if he's just trying, you know, flexing his muscle and wants to do it this way. I mean, why does the government need to shut down? And if we're asking for all this money, are we asking for money for the people who aren't getting paid right now during this shutdown?
Right. Well, it's to equate it to something that everyone has experienced. It's I'm taking my ball and going home, or in this case, I'm taking my wall and going home.
It's the country's ball, though.
Well,
it's not your ball to take home.
It should be. Yeah, it
should be. I'm so baffled.
Well, yeah, it's confusing and upsetting because there's so many innocent people who have come right out and said, I have a family, and they don't care about this wall. I mean, this campaign promise about the wall, they want to eat food, and they want heat. That's what they want.
Well, it might be upsetting, Bill, but I'll disagree with you. It's not confusing. It's pretty simple. You know, the president is insistent. Well, in fact, he was willing to sign the spending bill out of the Senate up until the last minute, and then Rush Limbaugh and others, sort of Mark Meadows, a congressman, you know, had him reverse course after Mitch McConnell, the Senate Republican leader, passed the legislation. So even McConnell was blindsided by this. But it's fairly simple. The president isn't going to give in on this because he's afraid to offend the far right conservative supporters of his. The Democrats aren't going to give in on it because they don't want to give him a single issue.
But Steve, if you look at, I mean, you already know this. His promise about the wall said, and who's going to pay for it? Mexico. That was the whole big thing.
Well, he's still claiming that's due to trade, ridiculous.
But a five-year-old can see through that. That's paper thin.
Sometimes the things he says, he must think we're just stupid.
Yeah.
You know, because what he's arguing now is that the profits or the increased revenue the U.S. would get from this new trade deal would be more than enough to offset paying for the wall. Well, that's not Mexico paying for the wall.
No.
That money comes to us otherwise.
Right.
That's us paying for the wall.
Right.
All right. We have to take a break. We're running a little late. I really apologize for getting Bertrand's news. His 10:30 news will be more like 10:35. But
what?
We'll get there. It's Steve Bertrand coming up. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Thank you, Steve. This is going to be a very special edition of Bill and Wendy here on 720.
It definitely is.
I am just going to come right out and say it. I am completely disorganized.
My name is Wendy S., and I have a clutter problem.
Totally, 100%, to the fact where I'm not like on Hoarders. I shouldn't be on the Hoarders show, because you can walk through our house, but I have certain areas of my house, one being the dining room table, which has been a problem in every house, apartment, and when I didn't have a dining room table and had a bedroom, it was a table, my drafting table in my bedroom.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I'm a piler. I need help, and the clutter therapist is with us. Kim Cosentino is here. Kim, I saw you your name online, and I looked up cluttering services and decluttering, came across declutterbox.com. You're local. You're in Westmont.
Yes.
Can you help me?
Yes. First of all, you're not alone. 50% of the people that call me have paper problems because, number one, people don't know what to keep, what not to keep a lot of times. When you have a lot of paperwork, it's just unmade decisions. When things come in, you're just not sure. Do I need to keep it or not?
That's
it. So you pile it on the table.
To deal with it later, but later never comes.
Yes, exactly. So there's a couple things you need to do. One, you need to set a limit as to how much accumulates. I typically have people, when they call me about paper organizing, is have a shoebox size container. The size of the shoebox will support paperwork being stood up. And what?
How many shoeboxes can I have?
One. And it's not a man's shoebox or a boot box. It's a normal woman's shoebox. But what happens is, oh, she's crying.
No, I'm not. No, I'm stamping my foot because it's like I want more shoeboxes.
But what happens is when you stand up your paperwork instead of piling it, when you pile it, all you can do is see what's on top.
Yep.
When you file it, you can flip through and find what you need. As you're flipping through your paperwork, you can throw away things. I always suggest putting a garbage can near that shoebox. And as you're flipping through, you're putting all the active paperwork that's coming in there. And you'll say, oh, I don't need that anymore. I don't need window stuff. I don't need this right now. Remember that anything that are coupons will come every month, so you don't need to keep them. But then you whittle it down. when the shoebox gets completely full, it's a signal that it's time to weed and eliminate. So the next thing about organizing is you need to schedule time. So that's a signal, I need to schedule time. What's a great time for you? Are you a morning person? Are you a night person?
And then is this you time schedule every day or week or when the shoebox is
when
full?
When the shoebox gets full, yeah, like you cannot shove anything else in there.
That's when your time is up.
Yes, your time is up.
The buzzer goes off.
All right.
And, you know, and if I may just interrupt, and any callers, I feel like I'm alone in this problem, but you say I'm not. 312-981-7200. We'll give you information to
write that number down. Keep it.
To get a hold of Kim Costantino, the Declutter Box, declutterbox.com. I host Thanksgiving every year. Bill, you know the story.
I do.
My dining room table is a mess. And that's my catch-all. That's where the kids' paperwork is that I have to deal with for the school. That's where bills are. That's where things I need to return. It just all seems to be right there. And I clean everything off to have Thanksgiving dinner. The maintenance is what is impossible for me.
Well, first of all, there should be homes for all those categories of stuff.
There are no homes.
So you need me to come visit you, for number one.
All right.
But number two is things that need to be returned should be over there by the door where you're going out to your car. So,
or in the trunk of your car.
Yes, or the trunk of your car. But as you're working in your house, you want to move it to your launching pad. So,
do you know how many launching pads I have?
Near the door to go out?
It's like Cape Canaveral at Wendy's house. You don't want to see it.
But you know what? That's home to you. But if it overwhelms
it
you...
It does, and it stresses me out, and it stresses my family out. You want, you know, if somebody in the old days, people used to ring the doorbell, and you'd hit, oh, who's here? Come on in.
Right.
I don't want to let people in.
Yeah, we don't want that. We want you to enjoy your home, and when you get to the point where you're overwhelmed and stressed out, then we need to put systems into place. And really, those systems are based on how you think and operate. And we're going to walk through when I come to visit you and look at where do you go out the door and give you a container for the stuff that's going to be returned. And you can always ask your kids, take it to the, you know, delegate it. Those papers, all those papers should be back in that shoebox. So we weed those papers, but we're also making sense out of those papers. Are there things that you refer to just once in a while, but you need to keep them? Then they can go in a drawer. Are there things you're actively involved in? So maybe we make a couple file folders that when you do have them, there's a home for them to go.
Do you have
and
a file cabinet?
Here's the sick thing that I can't believe I'm even going to admit.
They're somewhere.
I have two file cabinets.
Oh, you do?
Because my husband, when we got married, brought his.
Oh.
They're filled up with things, and we had our bedroom remodeled, so he just brought them up to the attic, and they're filled with things I haven't looked at in years.
Oh. But it's, yes, you're very normal. A normal household these days only need one file cabinet and actually one file drawer for your current paperwork that deals with the major things in your life.
Mm-hmm.
So I even have a list of the major categories of stuff to keep.
Probably tax stuff, probably passports.
Yeah, receipts for taxes, but a lot of times people keep everything. They keep every month's investment statement.
You don't need
they
to do
keep
that.
All the utility bills, unless your house is a tax write-off. You don't need to do that.
Yeah.
So there's all these things people save every check. You don't, if you still get your checks, you don't need to do it. It's just things for taxes. So it's a lot of more detailed, but when I work with you, I give you that information.
And
so
people,
you know,
can
what to keep.
Get it's let's take a break and we'll come back and find the details. I feel good. 773 has texted a picture. I don't know if you can see it, Bill, but it's a dining room table buried in stuff and says,
not
I'm not alone. That's good to know.
That's nice.
She's Kim Costantino, the clutter therapist, owner of the Declutter Box. It's over in Westmont. Perhaps you're moving or a parent has died and you need to clean out the house. You help with that as well?
Yes, I help make sense, figure out what's of value and what isn't. And then we also help stage with what people have.
We will take a quick break. If you have any questions, please let me know I'm not alone in this.
You're not alone.
You're not even looking at me in the shameful way I expected you to.
Not yet.
All right.
We're building.
312-981-7200, Bill and Wendy. Oh, I got to take care of some business. TCB, baby. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We're talking about decluttering. It's that time of year, of course, a New Year's resolution. I thought, oh, yeah, I'm going to get things decluttered. And that's when I came upon the website, declutterbox.com, and Kim Cosentino, owner of the Declutter Box in Westmont, is in the studio with us. We've talked about papers. There is a calendar on your website free for people to use.
Oh, definitely.
To give tips of how to get started.
Yeah, what I did was... It's called the game plan page of our website, and it gives some written tips as to what you need to do, steps. You need to schedule time. You know, you need to make sure you have good lighting. A lot of people have a place where they put all their stuff, and it's an overwhelming place, but there's only one lamp, so you want to avoid it. Mm-hmm. But then the calendar, you break this project down. So if you want to do your wardrobe, you know, start it where maybe I'm just taking all the old hangers that have nothing on it out of my closet one day. And then another day, I'm going to put all my jeans together and see which ones that, you know, I wear, which ones I don't. In every drawer that you have, you know, put a theme to each drawer, whether it's in the kitchen or in your bedroom, so that you now, it's like departments in a store.
Right.
Your home is your own personal store.
Yeah.
And so we want is for you to make sense of it and not be overwhelmed with your space. And when you walk in the door, you know where to put things. And when you want something, you know where to find them.
Yeah.
And the other thing is to have a launching pad, a place for where your things are going out into the world, and a landing pad where you're putting your keys and your purse, and you know where to find them all the time. It's so important that you can start off the day with things you need. So those permission slips, things you're going to return or get repaired or take to mom's, put it in the launching and landing pad so they'll go out the door the next day. You have it the night before. My daughter always had a place by the steps where she put her backpack and her keys and anything extra she needed.
Right.
And then she just grabbed and went.
Right. Go on, Wendy.
No, I'm just.
Here's a question about clothing. I've heard this before, but I've heard the answers vary. If you haven't worn something in blank, throw it away. What's the time duration where if you have an article of clothing that you've not worn, it's time to go, I'm not going to wear that?
Well, what happens is we get 80% value out of 20% of what we have.
Mm-hmm.
And so your clothing truly is things you wear all the time. I love telling people that what you need to do is when you're shopping, say, can I get rid of four things in my closet or drawers before I buy this one item?
Where were you 20 years ago when I was shopping?
I was doing this 25 years ago. God. I started this.
Kim, do I still need my Little League uniform, do you think?
Well,
I
if
still
it looks
have it.
Cute on
but
you, you
it looks
can
adorable
keep it.
On me.
If your wife likes it, keep it.
Okay, hold that thought, because if you do have your Little League uniform,
I do.
But that is a sentimental thing that, I'm sorry, you don't give that away. So do you put it in a box and put it in your attic? What do you do? Because there are things that have sentimental value, even though you don't wear them.
Yes. So the motto is, keep the things you use.
Mm-hmm.
You need,
mm-hmm.
and you enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
If you enjoy that Little League uniform...
When's the last time you looked at it?
Looked at it a year ago, wore it 45 years ago.
So you know? Do you want to take a picture of it and pass it on to someone else? Do you want to put it, display it, because it's
all
a
of a sudden
thing?
It's not just me.
The picture of it part is interesting, because I think a lot of people do this. You save things because you say, at some point I'm gonna save these things from my childhood and show them to my kids, and we'll all just love that moment.
And what happens when you show them to your
don't
kids?
Care.
They don't
your
care.
Your kids look at it and go, well, I don't want to see your report card from fifth grade. Throw that away.
That is so true, but you're not alone. A lot of people do that.
Yeah.
Or mom is going to come and strike them down if they get rid of something.
Yes.
And I tell them, if mom is gone now, she's looking at you right now and saying, get rid of it. If you don't like it, you don't enjoy it. So it has to fit those criteria. And I'll repeat it again. Do you use it? Do you need it? Do you enjoy it?
Mm.
How can you enjoy it? Can I enjoy it at a friend's house on their child, who's maybe 3 or 4 years old, as a costume for Halloween? Can I pass it to the high school for a play that they might do in the future? So you want to broaden your horizons when you're looking at something
that
like
that. That makes sense.
We're talking to Kim Cosentino, a.k.a. the Clutter Therapist. I am going to bring up Marie Kondo. I talked to you about her off the air. I bought her best-selling book, Spark Joy. I read it. It's a system that is very intense about tidying up, and I found a Netflix reality series featuring Marie Kondo called Tidying Up. I binged it. I watched every episode. She is Japanese. She blesses the house. She has you hold clothing, and if you're getting rid of it, if it doesn't spark joy in you, you get rid of it, and you thank your clothing for giving you a great life, and you move on. And I was inspired by it, but realistically, I can't see myself following each and every one of her steps. For clothing, you're supposed to get every ounce of clothing you own, everything for you,
yeah,
from drawers, closets, pile it on your bed. It's a great effect because you look at it and you go, oh my God, I have so much stuff. I don't need all this. Perhaps that sparks you to get rid of things. But realistically, I don't have time to pile every ounce of clothing I have in a pile. So can I work in bits and pieces?
Yes, definitely. I love that she has made so much interest in organizing that people realize that they're not by themselves. The fact that she has Netflix means there's so many people overwhelmed now. The 80s were a time when we could acquire. Now we are looking at the stuff we acquired. We've gotten mom and dad stuff, maybe grandma and grandpa's stuff, and there's so much we're overwhelmed. You really want to break it down into manageable increments. So I go back to, you need to schedule time. We're all very busy. What's your prime time? Do you need to incorporate your family into helping you?
Mm-hmm.
If it's a bigger project like the garage. But you want to break it down. And the calendar that I have on the website, so the game plan page, shows you how you can simply break down and just do a couple drawers.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you're waiting for somebody and they're running late and you have a half an hour. Go through the junk drawer and make sense out of it.
Organize your time much the way you would organize
Correct.
Your things.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Stuck in traffic, go through your glove compartment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then always reward yourself, but not with stuff.
Oh.
You know, treat your, no more stuff.
Great
Remember,
idea.
You get 80% value really out of most of what you have.
Yeah.
80% value out of 20% of what you have. So it's not just your clothes, it's the other things.
Yeah.
But reward yourself with maybe a coffee date, a pedicure, going to work out, or mm-hmm. going for a run, maybe going out for a game of golf afterwards. Or somebody asks you, let's go to lunch. Say, instead of going at noon, I'll go at 1. And you say, I'll take that extra hour and I'll work on a drawer, or I'll work on, you know, a cupboard or a shelf, or weed through my books. And then my reward is to go to lunch with somebody.
Right.
We are out of time. I wish we had more of it. It's nice to know a lot of texts and pictures of cluttered households. The best way for people to reach you?
To go to the website or give us a call, and that's on the website as well.
Declutterbox.com.
Correct.
630-968-7557. You're out in Westmont. You will be getting a call from me.
All right.
Bring a semi. Trust me.
I do have backup. I have some nice lifelines that can help as well.
All right.
I came, I saw, I organized. That's
our motto. We'll have to have you back again because we didn't get to a lot of calls, including a happy customer, Sue, that you helped organize.
Oh, wonderful.
So thank you. It's a pleasure to meet you. Kim Cosentino, the clutter therapist. Go to declutterbox.com. And coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And it is the start of a new year. We were talking about decluttering, and that was kind of a therapy. And now we're doing more therapy. This is our New Year's show.
Dr. John Duffy joins us. John, I know we have something very specific to talk about today. However,
yes,
the big story here in Chicago this week was the Bears and the ugly finish against the Philadelphia Eagles. Yep, that sound that Wendy just made has been playing in our heads since Sunday afternoon. All right, so in addition to watching a football game on Sunday, we were also watching a mental game. You know what I mean. The kicker for the Bears, Cody Parkey, has had so many incidents this year where a kick hits the pole, hits the uprights, and
right.
it doesn't go our way. And everybody kept saying, well, that's not going to happen in the playoffs. What a horrible finish that would be. And then it happened in the playoffs, and what a horrible
ironic,
finish it
isn't
was.
It?
More than ironic.
Right.
Alanis Morissette. Boy, she's always right.
Oh.
All right. Let's talk about the psychology of that. Let's say you're a pro athlete, and you've had incidents like he's had all year where, as luck may have it, the ball he kicks hits the posts and it doesn't work out.
Right.
That's in his head then in the last minute of the game, isn't it?
It's not just in his head, but there's this research that Malcolm Gladwell did a few years ago with a tennis player, Bill,
yeah,
that you might find interesting, where she got so in her head early in a match, and she was ahead, that she started thinking about each swing. And by the time she was thinking about the swing, the ball was already past her, and she lost every single game, and she had won the first set.
Right.
So what I think happened with Parkey is, over the course of the season, as you miss a couple of these field goals that are awfully close,
sure,
you get in your head and you psych yourself out. And so instead of muscle memory taking over, think about the kick right before.
Beautiful. Right? Well, even that wasn't beautiful, but it went through
the uprights, right? He did his job.
Before and he was iced.
Right.
And once he was iced, he was in his head. And, you know, the icing was actually probably a pretty brilliant call on the part Eagles. And it made him think for a moment. And the minute you think,
yeah,
I think as an athlete or anybody who works from muscle memory, a musician, virtually anybody who works through muscle memory, if that gets disrupted and you start to actually think through moment to moment what you're doing, you're bound to make a mistake that you wouldn't make otherwise.
Makes sense.
I know this is stupid, and I know my live reads are not that great, but when I'm rolling through it, if all of a sudden I start going, wow, I'm really nailing this, and I think instead of just being in the moment, screw it up every time.
Right.
Every time.
It's a great example. Yeah.
So the game is over. The team loses. He gets support from the team. The teammates come over. They hug him. They tell him they love him.
Yes.
We've got your back, they all say to him. When he goes to bed at night and he lays in bed, what is that night going to be like for him?
I think the first few nights are like literally like a post-traumatic event. I mean,
although he's making a lot of money still, so that takes away some of the pain, doesn't it?
I think it does, although, you know, I think when you hear so many negative things about yourself, you see it on Twitter, you see it in the newspapers, I think that plays a number on you. I think the fear of, this is my legacy, this is what I've done with my entire life to date, and this moment is going to define it. Nobody's going to remember that I had not a bad percentage, even this entire year.
Right.
People are going to remember the doinks.
So Bill Buckner, who we all know from baseball lore, was the Boston Red Sox first baseman, and a ball goes under his legs and it costs the Red Sox the World Series. He has talked so many times about the depression that he went through after that.
Yeah.
Because even though it's just a baseball and he fielded thousands and thousands of them, that one time when he really needed to get the ball over, he didn't get it over. So what is that like for the rest of a guy's life? Are you always going to be that moment?
And Buckner didn't even have the internet.
No, he did not.
No, right, exactly, right? So,
sorry to interrupt.
No, but that's correct. I mean, so things have acted, the ante has been upped in terms of the criticism,
right,
no doubt, because of the internet, and it's easy because it's kind of like internet rage, like road rage. It's you know, you're a little bit anonymous when you offer it. But here's what Parkey has, I think, on his side that Buckner might not have had.
Yeah.
Is if you look through the press, you'll find plenty of negative things about him. He should be fired. He's not doing his job well. You will also find, even in the past few days, some really positive press about him. Forbes, The Washington Post, Heidi Stevens at the Tribune wrote a really great piece about how he has taught her kids the grace of losing with, you know, some elegance and some degree of grace.
Right.
And so he actually has the luxury, I think, of being, of failing grandly at this point in time. Because
right.
I think we are past this point where we are willing to bully somebody into ruining them.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you, was not the player psychology, but us, the fan psychology.
Yeah.
Is there was a time, and I mean, we've already talked about Bill Buckner, but I said the next day, I said, when you think about the football players of old, those gritty, angry men, would they have embraced him and said, hey, we got your back, we love you, we'll hug you? That wouldn't have happened 20 years ago, would it?
I was thinking the very thing, and I was thinking 20 years ago. So you think about a Bears team 20 years ago, any professional team 20 years ago, and they would throw that guy under the bus.
Yep.
So I think we have developed collectively some emotional intelligence in sports and otherwise that has allowed us to back off. I was just telling you guys that I was worried right after that Parkey kick, once I was past the grief of it, what's going to happen to this guy? Are we going to Steve Bartman this guy?
Right.
And as it turns out, we didn't. And I think everybody kind of had to take a pause and a moment, even his fellow players, and recognize, okay, this was a mistake. He didn't do his job very well. It is not. He kicks footballs for a living. This is not worth ruining a guy's life.
But right? He should kick them through the uprights if that's what he does for a living.
Yeah,
and I'm not being mean. And quite honestly, I was so mad when it happened, like immediately, like, are you kidding me? But then almost immediately after that, I felt so sorry for him. And I started, as the day went on the next day, the offense didn't do much either. He got us, with his prior field goals, he got us close to tying the game and being ahead. They could have done more on the offense.
Well, this is where the narrative, I think, online is pretty helpful, because there's this retrospective that people do. We want to react just to the moment, but when you look back to the game as a whole, the team didn't perform as well as they could have, as well as they have all year. They kind of played conservatively in the fourth quarter. We're not doing sports analysis, but this is
right,
my argument.
Right, right.
And so it comes down to a field goal kick, and I think most teams would say, we don't want it to come down to that. We don't want to rely on a kicker, especially a guy who's struggling over the course of the year, and yet this is what it came down to. So everybody kind of took
one more
their
touchdown,
hits.
And it wouldn't have come down to that.
Right.
So maybe, you know,
very true.
Happened.
Right.
All right, thanks for helping us sort that out. We'll take a little break and then more with Dr. John Duffy next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Dr. Duffy, my eyes.
Wait, that's not the right lyric,
no,
is it?
It
you changed the lyrics, Weird Al Yankovic.
Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist. You can hear him on Better, the podcast he does with his wife, Julie, and his book, The Available Parent, drjohnduffy.com. You're also doing some of the nightside shows here on WGN, aren't you?
I am. Yeah, it's very fun stuff.
He's on the radio.
Yeah,
that's
thank
excellent.
You, guys. That's fun.
And thank you. That wouldn't have happened before, but for you guys. So I appreciate that.
You're very,
seriously.
Very welcome. Here's a huge problem that I'm just becoming aware of.
Yeah.
And that it's marijuana related and it's kid related. Explain.
Weed hater.
I'm a weed hater.
You're a weed hater.
Yep.
I find myself to be more and more a weed hater too. And the way kids justify weed is it's a far more safer drug than alcohol. Nobody ever dies from smoking weed.
Yeah.
But what they fail to recognize is it drains motivation, and there are a number of negative effects to smoking on a regular basis. But one thing that some other therapists and I have been noticing in the last, let's say, 2, maybe 3 years or so, is we've worked with a lot of young people, young men in particular, who have had a moment where they smoke pot recreationally, and they the next day they feel odd, and over time they feel like, I'm never going to find my right mind again. I feel weird. I feel flat. I can't find my affect. I can't think straight. And I think I'm losing my mind, and I don't think there's any way to recoup it. And this goes on for weeks, sometimes months, up to 6 months, before they finally get their bearings.
So we know what's causing
this?
Yeah,
what's happening?
So I've talked to a couple of psychiatrists about this, and they are perplexed about what causes this. There are a couple of theories. One is that the potency factor of pot is far higher than it used to be by 10-fold or 20-fold or even 30-fold, and there's no real easy way to know what dose you are smoking.
Yeah.
The other
That's
is,
what's so scary. You open a beer, you know what's in a beer. You get a joint from someone, you have no idea. And I'm not talking like fentanyl or dusted. You don't know the strength, the quality, anything.
No, and it's not just joints now. So you've got things like dabs and wax and edibles. And this stuff becomes even more difficult to dose. And kids have really no idea. And even people who own dispensaries. I talked to one guy in Colorado who said, yeah, I'm not sure exactly how to dose this either. So this is all
That's scary.
A chemistry experiment. It is scary. It is quite scary.
At some point, there's a rebound.
Yes.
At some point, but there's no telling when that rebound will come or if it'll come, or does it always come back?
So far, in my experience and the experience of the therapists I've talked to, the rebound has always come. On the long end, it's taken 6 months, and 6 months of effectively not functioning, not getting out of bed sometimes, not making it to school, feeling so far out of your regular mind. And the funky thing is, when you talk to these kids, they seem like they're functioning perfectly well. They seem like what they describe themselves to be. Their personalities ring.
Yeah.
And yet they don't feel that.
Why is it more guys than girls?
I think more guys have a habit of smoking than girls do by a significant number. Although that's closing, but it's still a significant gap. Yeah. Yeah.
Things are so much different. When I was in high school, there were a few people that smoked pot, and sometimes some people were experimental with it. Jewels were not around.
Nope.
Vapes. And you make a point about it being stronger and more potent. It smells completely differently now than it did the '70s and '80s.
Yes, it's far stronger. It's far, yes. I think kids would say, skunkier.
Yes.
And there's all these different strains. So if you went into a shop and in Colorado and said, I find that I'm anxious a lot of the time, they'd say, oh, you should try this strain over here. I'm depressed a lot of the time. Oh, well, this one over here is going to be the one that helps you. But it's all a little disheartening because we're normalizing something that I think is, in effect, self-medicating. You know, I think anybody who smokes frequently is medicating anxiety and or depression in a very inefficient, sometimes dangerous way.
Although they're doing it with alcohol, too.
Absolutely.
John,
absolutely.
In the areas of the country where marijuana is legal, are they still experiencing this level of the symptoms you just described?
I think it's a little more managed when it's not 16-year-olds who are selling it, but actually dispensaries who may know a little bit more about the effects of the strains that they are selling. But it still happens in Colorado and Idaho and California, for sure.
Why isn't this getting more press? That's a huge...
It's part of the reason I wanted to talk to you guys about it, is that I researched it last night.
Yeah.
I've talked to 5 or 6 therapists over the course of the last 2 weeks about it. Every single one of us has experienced this multiple times.
Yeah.
But I think we're the only ones who know this is a phenomenon. And most of these kids think they are suffering alone and they're the only ones who have ever felt this. So part of the reason I wanted to talk about it was I wanted them to know this is something you will get over, but it's also a cautionary tale for anybody who is smoking now, because you're not sure what the impact is going to be.
But is this enough of a deterrent? Like, if I was a kid that was using it with some regularity, I would go, like everything else, well, that's not going to happen to me.
Right, right. You know? And unfortunately, you're probably right that it's not enough of a deterrent. But my hope is that if there's enough talk about this, it might be a deterrent to some kids.
Good.
And at least might get them thinking about what they're ingesting.
Yeah.
I will say this. I am a proponent for legalizing marijuana. I am. I think it's a good idea for adults. And I have to throw out the for adults. I have to be honest with you. When I was a stupid teenager, I didn't realize that my brain wasn't fully formed yet.
Sure.
At what age? Because this is stuff we know now. I mean, maybe some people knew it when we were growing up, but right. I sure thought my brain was fully developed. I think it's still developing, quite honestly. But that's the problem. These kids whose brains aren't fully developed, alcohol or marijuana, not good for them. How old are we when our brains are fully formed?
It's actually around the mid-20s.
Really?
And especially important parts of the brain, not the parts that keep us alive, but the parts that that manage executive functioning, that impulse control and self-regulation, all that stuff that is managed by the frontal lobe is still developing until we're about 25 years old. And if we short-circuit that development, then we never really fully gain all those capacities. And that's dangerous over the course of life.
And scary when you know it.
Yeah. Yep.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So whose job will it be to look into this, John, and find out what's happening and why this is more prevalent than ever?
My hope is that the APA, and the FDA do studies into what's the phenomenon at play here, what's driving this, because this specific phenomenon I'm describing is alarming and growing. That's something that's palpable. I can tell that that's happening.
Yeah.
So it requires some kind of attention from an agency or a substantial lobbying group like the APA. But the pot use overall, I think we are overly cavalier because we are legalizing this. And I'm with you, Wendy. I am absolutely for the legalization of marijuana. There are far more lethal drugs that are legal and on the market now, but we have to teach our kids how to regulate that, if that's something they're going to be doing.
And, I mean, alcohol is legal, and there are people that have problems with it, and many of us who don't.
Yeah.
The same's going to happen when marijuana becomes legal. There are going to be people that abuse it and people that don't.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And education around that kind of issue is the way to mitigate it and get past it, for sure.
Always a pleasure talking to you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
We look forward to seeing you again, Dr. John Duffy. Best way for people to get in touch with you?
Yeah, drjohnduffy.com is a pretty good clearinghouse for me. You can find just about everything I do right there.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, guys.
News is next.
No, news is now.
News is now, everybody. You don't have to wait. Not like the old days where you had to wait. We're bringing the news to you immediately. Eric, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder. Wendy, I have asked a coworker and friend, Sarah Thiemann, to join us here in studio.
She's wearing a sash.
She's wearing a sash, and she always wears a sash, don't you, Sarah? I'm trying to remember if you always do or if it's just today.
I wish I did always wear a sash. I think I should always wear a sash. I think everybody should wear a sash.
Everybody should wear a sash. Sarah, of course, promotions manager here at WGN Radio, and a frequent guest to John Williams' show. I've heard you on with John several times. Today is a very important day in your life, a milestone day, as you know. As you turn, can I say the number without you getting upset? Is it all right?
Yeah, I'm
60.
Is it 60? I think it's 60. Is
thanks,
it?
Wendy.
40.
Yeah, 40.
Turning 40. You have taken this news with kind of a mixed dose of emotions, correct?
That is very
is that fair?
Correct to say, yes.
All right, so why? Because I went through the exact same thing at 40 and at 50. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is? Why is this news, you know, even though you knew this was coming,
right,
why is this hard to digest?
You know, I went through the same thing when I turned 30. I think it's that fact of you reaching a new decade and like what that means to you.
Yeah.
And I still remember, I was reading some funny quotes today, looking about age, and one quote I found said, old age is 10 years older than what my age is.
Oh.
And I was like, that's cool.
That's very funny.
I like that. But I remember, well, like when my dad turned 40,
yep,
and I remember we got him like an over the hill cake.
Yeah.
And so I think it's those.
How young are your parents? Do you remember when your dad turned 40?
I do.
So my dad is 30 years older than me. So he'll turn 70 in July.
So any bad things he throws at you,
yes,
you can throw back at him.
Snowball blizzard back at him in
good.
A couple months.
That's good. Mm-hmm. I'm proud of you for that.
He hasn't texted me yet or messaged me. So just wait, Pops. It's a coming.
But it's hard to figure out yourself being an age that, like you said, because I always equated 40, not with me, but my parents' friends are 40. I can't be
right.
40.
I know.
That doesn't make sense.
And I think that's what it is. I'm like, how did I get here?
Yeah.
You know, and
so quickly.
Right.
Right.
And I know.
It wasn't quickly.
It was quickly.
It does kind
it didn't
of
seem,
go back.
Did it seem like it took 40 years for you to become 40? It doesn't, right?
No. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
I think the 30s for me flew by a bit. You know, and I guess the thing is, like, I kind of hope by 40 I figured it all out, and
right,
I don't think I figured out a lot.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I have a lot of goals and things
we're
I want
to accomplish. We're still figuring things out, and we're older than
you'll
you.
Always,
right.
But won't you always
yes.
be that way forever?
Because if you don't right. keep trying to figure things out, I think you'll be bored and complacent.
Right.
And
right.
I think that's the beauty of it, is coming to that self-acceptance of, you know, never stop and never think that, okay, when you've reached some magical age, like
right.
for me, when I was 21, my goal, by the time I had reached 21, I wanted to either publish a book or be in a film.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're 16.
What's the name of your book and what movie were you in?
Well, I know. That's why I'm saying these goals and these things you set for yourself are so ridiculous sometimes.
I thought I'd be married at 28 with like 3 to 5 kids.
Oh.
And
you,
I didn't get
are,
married
you
till
got married
35.
Later, and you only talk about two of your kids.
Yeah, well, they're the only ones worth mentioning. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the goals we had were not accurate,
right.
or we didn't even know ourselves when we made those goals.
Yep. And, you know, I thought I knew myself, and I think, I guess that's the problem with the Capricorn. I fall into this mentality of like, I'm very old. I think old, I think. And I read somewhere that Capricorns, when they hit like their 70s or 80s, suddenly like have this like wind
rebirth.
And go crazy
oh.
and like act like kids when
oh.
they're like older. So I'm kind of waiting
to.
For that moment.
I'm hoping it happens to me. I'm an Aquarian, but.
Mike Toomey, a friend of mine from the WGN TV Morning News, told me something very upsetting as I was approaching 40. 40. He said there's a blend factor. He goes, when you were a kid, like, tell me something big that happened to you when you were 9, and I did. And he goes, tell me something big that happened to you when you were 13, and I did. He goes, now tell me something that happened when you were 24. Oh, like those years in the 20s and the 30s, they kind of get lost. They kind of all blend together.
Yep.
Not for me. That's when I started in radio.
So you can remember stuff like almost every year, like if I said 23 a 26, and on, a 28, yeah. 32, you can remember that stuff?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
I would say for me, my 21st year for me was, I knocked that one out of the park.
Did
man.
You?
Oh, yeah.
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 But isn't it funny how, like, that's a milestone you can't wait to have happen? Wow, 21's going to be met, but 40, you're dreading.
Right. Well, and 21 wasn't even, like, to do cool 21 things. That was the year I, like, my life changed because I'd studied abroad in England and met my, you know, future husband. Yep. And, you know, I think it seeded my love of travel. So, for sure, like, 21 is always the year I go back to as, like, hashtag goals.
Yeah.
And, you know, reliving that. But, I, you know,
my goal was to hit 8 bars in an hour when I was 21. We're very different, Sarah.
They did give me the bar mat on my 21st birthday that I did.
I got 21 pictures on my birthday.
21, Eric? That's not bad.
Yeah. That's cool.
That's excellent.
And I did it at 2 bars.
Oh, wow.
21 pictures?
Well, I had friends with me, but 21 pictures on your 21st birthday.
Did you Good live golly. To see the next day?
Wow. I didn't drink them all myself. I had a straw.
Now, in keeping with turning 40, yesterday you threw out your back.
I did.
Good for you.
Yeah, real good.
Get the ball rolling right out of the box.
Yep. So today I have a Golden Cup muscle balm and a ThermaCare.
Why aren't you using Tiger Balm? Isn't that what Shaq promotes?
I think it is.
Well, when we went to Thailand in September, I brought back all the balms and the smelling salts and the
So.
And you still threw your back out.
I know.
That's bad.
So ridiculous.
So as the day progresses, is there more acceptance? Are you more going, why did I dread this? It really is just another day. I'm not much older. I'm a day older.
Yep.
40 years older.
Yep. You know what's been great? And like, I almost like got into the ugly cry on the train on my way to work.
No,
only because friends have been posting like some of the most beautiful, like heartfelt things. I feel so humbled and honored that I am lucky enough to be surrounded by so many amazing people in my life.
What does that feel like?
It like,
Wendy,
on my birthday, I get goofy stuff. I don't get these profound things. Although this is a milestone birthday.
Yeah, I'm sure that's why it's coming out. But you know, just. Your birthday is like, I guess, a good thing and a bad thing all at the same time, because it's a day where you really have the spotlight on you and you're like, wow, I am kind of like, you don't like to say you're awesome. And I really don't believe that I'm all that awesome. But when people are like, you know, saying cool things to you,
I'm
you're
not
like,
too bad.
Maybe I'm kind of awesome.
Like,
and I feel bad saying that, but I'm like,
no, we
screw
should
it.
All. That's most of our problems. We need to feel more confident in ourselves. Mm-hmm. Not conceited, but you need to go, you know what? I'm pretty cool.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, Pete McMurray had talked about that book by Jen Sincero, You Are a Badass. Mm-hmm. And I read it as my first book for 2019. And I feel like I can embrace that. Like, you know, you are. I think you can say
it. Yeah, you can say it. How many books did you read in 2018?
72.
72.
I heard her say that.
I saw 72 books. I read 11.
Do you have a new goal this year just to top that?
It would be nice to top that. I would at least say at least 52 books, so like one book a week. I'm reading right now my second, plus I have 6 others on the go that I didn't finish in 2018.
Sarah, at my school, we had a chart on the wall with all the kids' names written vertically and then the number of books they read. Were you always the champion of that in your school?
You know, we never tracked it.
You guys didn't keep track?
But, I mean, I've been blind and wearing glasses and contacts since I was the second grade, so... Yeah. I went to the eye doctor the other day, and I'm like, oh, thank goodness my prescription didn't change after reading like 72 books.
Well, happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Don't dread it. Don't look at it as 40. Look at it as halfway to 80. You're halfway to 80. You feel better now? Good. Mission accomplished.
Thanks, good job.
That's all
thanks,
I wanted.
Happy birthday.
We're happy for you.
Thank
Sarah.
You.
All right, we'll take a quick break, and then more of us, Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thanks, Wendy. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Hi. You can reach us at 312-981-7200. Call us or text us or do both, whatever you're comfortable with. Here's an interesting job offer, Wendy. You're not job hunting, are you? You have a job. You're happy with your job. You're not looking for anything work-wise, are you?
Nope.
All right. If you were, would you consider this? There's an island off of the coast of California that has a lighthouse on it, and they are looking for somebody to come and live on the island and maintain the lighthouse, and they will pay you $130,000 a year to do that.
Can you ever leave the island? Can you have a party on the island? How big is it?
All great questions, and none of
do
which
do you have transportation in case
to
of
and
an
from
emergency? Like, do you have your own boat in case of an emergency?
These are all good questions.
Where there's
that you
a giant worm coming through a wormhole, and you have to escape that?
I don't know that that would be a factor. But ask that question at the job interview. I think that's a great. It says, are you ready to escape the hectic pace of the Bay Area, but reluctant to give up your cushy salary? There's no need to flee to Austin, Texas. Your dream job may have just opened up in the middle of San Pablo Bay. East Brother Light Station. It sits on a small island just north
How
of
small?
Richmond. It doesn't say the specifics of the size of the island.
What if it was as big as this studio?
That's not, I mean, it's a big studio, but it wouldn't be
a big island.
A big island.
And right. A lighthouse in the middle of it.
So, big island. Now, I've seen pictures of the island. There's not other stuff on the island. There's a nice.
No bowling alley?
No.
A bar?
Did you expect a bowl? No. There's no
liquor
bar.
Liquor store?
No. No. I'm sure they have runs. Like, you say to a guy, there's probably a guy nearby with access to a boat.
Grocery
and you say,
guy.
Here's, yeah, a grocery guy. Here's a list of some things I need. Could you just bop over, bring them back, and then I'll pay? I'm sure that's part of it. You're not just going to be isolated for a full year without any contact at all.
What if you get a late night craving for a beef chalupa supreme from Taco Bell?
Oh, they're not going to deliver. They will not deliver.
I'm out.
Maybe you would need, but that was
that's the deal breaker.
That's the deal breaker
yeah,
for you.
Sorry,
that's what crumbled it. It says the current operators, Che Rogers and Jillian Meeker, are going to be handing over the keys to their 1874 lighthouse, which they turned into a bed and breakfast.
Oh, so there are people there.
I guess people stop by. Applicants should be prepared to do everything it takes to keep the place running. This includes ferrying guests to the 0.7 acre out. Oh, so there's your size of the island. It's 7/10 of an acre.
That's
not big. That's not big. The house is big, and the lighthouse is big.
And there's a bed and breakfast, so there is food and...
You have to... Yeah, part of your job description is you have to ferry the guests back and forth.
I always wanted to be a seafarer.
Well, this is your chance. This is your opportunity. And I have to be honest with you, if somebody said, here's what the job entails and here's what the job is, I would not have guessed that those guys would make $130,000 a year, would you? That's pretty good money.
That is pretty good money. But
you could do it for a year or two and just bank the money.
You know why it's so much?
I don't know why.
Because that's a giant light bulb, and when that burns out, you
have to carry
crawl
the light bulb.
Up there.
You get a hernia.
Yep.
It's a dangerous job.
Or a hysnia if it's a guy.
Hysnia. The successful candidate will be a couple.
So
you gotta get Jimmy, you gotta get your husband on board on
all
this.
All right, well, if I don't have to be there alone, I wouldn't want to live in solitude.
No. No. One of whom must possess a Coast Guard commercial boat operator's license. You have that, don't you?
I could get it.
The not-for-profit, which operates the location, wrote all this in a press release. They will operate the 5-room inn. So it's 5 rooms. You could have up to 10 guests. That's fun.
But
people would visit you. You'd have friends come out and visit you.
Oh, Judy Pilak. She'd be the only
one. Judy's wide open. She'd come by for a few weeks.
There is a picture. Do you see the picture of the island in itself?
Yeah.
Because there's...
I've not seen the whole island.
There's the house/lighthouse, which isn't very tall, a big like banyan-type tree, and that's it.
That's all there is. Can I tell you what the do-or-die for me would be? If I got like satellite television and internet, you know, I would need those things. Absolutely need those things.
That's a given.
Right? Well... You'd say it's a given, but I wonder, I mean, I'm sure there's islands where those things aren't possible, right? Where they can't get that. You know, to be loaded up for satellite might not be the easiest thing if the island is far away. Although 7/10 acre, that's the size of the island. I don't know how far off the coast of California.
I love the way your brain works, and we're all in
doing the
right
calculations
now.
To see if this is worth my while or not.
It's right off of the coast of San Francisco, correct?
Can you see, like in that picture, I didn't see the picture you have, so can you see land beyond it?
Yeah.
You can?
It's look, not that far. There are mountains behind it.
Oh,
you could almost swim there.
Oh, that'd be a tough swim.
Well, yeah, but you could if you had to.
I guess.
So the deal breaker would be what, if you didn't have internet?
I would have to have satellite or cable with at least two premium channels.
And that's a given. Everybody has that now.
All right, so they give me that. I would need internet hookup.
It's a bed and breakfast. There are people that...
So there's got to be internet, you're saying?
One would think.
All right. Well, those are... Well, I'll do it. I'm in.
So there's no deal breaker. Me and the no so Taco far, Bell.
Right, that's your line. No Taco Bell? Please, don't waste my time. You will operate, if you get the job, Wendy, you will operate the five-room inn, which serves both dinner and breakfast, as well as I said, providing...
Here's Johnny.
Yeah, it didn't go well in The Shining, did it? No creepy twins in this hotel. As well as providing ferry service for guests and all other tasks, which includes being chief and maid.
Oh.
High-quality culinary experience...
I could do that. Their specialty, breakfast specialty, is a delicious-sounding French toast souffle.
That does sound good.
And I could teach that. Go to...
That sounds really good.
Tasty, and watch a video of somebody making that.
The inn is open 4 days a week. The island is
so
also...
So you have 3 days where you're not even working?
3 days to
three-day
do...
3-day weekend.
But there's aren't there lighthouse activities? Like, I don't know with the light... Believe it or not, I have never been in a lighthouse.
I haven't either.
So I don't know if it's your job if somebody says to you, Wendy, there's a boat coming around 7:10, so you got to make the light go on and off a few times so they know that there's an island there. I don't know how that scheduling works. I have no idea. If I get the job, I would demand somebody sit down with me and explain that to me if I get it.
Is there a giant light switch?
Yes.
And wall plate for a giant lighthouse?
I always picture a spirally staircase, I'm guessing, to get up to the top. To do your light duties.
And Marty Feldman walking up it?
If he's there, take that.
Frankenstein.
The unit's open 4 days a week. The island is also available for day use and for special events. Weddings, funerals, bar mitzvahs.
Yeah, but it sounds like you would be in charge of that. You That's would have to work to all these events. That's too much work.
Yeah, you're out. The new keepers are going to start mid-April of 2019.
If they find someone.
And there will be 2 weeks of training.
Okay, why does the family that's the couple that's there want out?
It's haunted.
Okay, that's
I left that out of the story. It's haunted. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back and hand things off pretty soon.
Yeah, and the stories that matter with Eric Rung from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom happening next here on WGN.